Hey, hey, welcome in. This is Filibuster, the Black and Red United podcast. I'm your host, Adam Taylor, managing editor of blackandredunited.com, joined, as always, by Jason Anderson and Ben Bromley, thanks to the magic of internet telephony. Find us, like I said, at blackandredunited.com. We all write there every single week, actually, so you can find a lot of stuff that we've written, including Ben Bromley's 200th post as an author at the site. Yeah, he's very proud of himself, and we gave him a participation trophy as a result. Find us on Twitter, at BlackAndRedU, at FilibusterDCU. Send us an email, filibusterpodcast@gmail.com. Got a show for you tonight. It's going to be sad. I'm not going to lie to you. It's going to be very sad. We're going to talk about DC United season to date. A little bit of a focus on last weekend's 2-0 loss, the 11th straight game without a win at Chicago. So that's going to be sad. And then we're going to talk about DC's game this weekend in New England with Steve Stewart, Steve Stewart, the managing editor of the Bent Musket. Of course, the Revolution just dropped a 5-0 win on the LA Galaxy, who are otherwise one of the best teams in MLS. So yay, DC United playing. I'm already sad, you guys. But I'm not going to ask this question like I'm sad, because that would be really sad. Hey, Ben, what are you drinking?
Well, Adam and Jason, I am drinking a Washington apple. I think I've had this on the podcast before, but if not, I'll remind you what the ingredients are. It is bourbon and apple pucker and cranberry juice, and it is quite delicious.
I'll bet. It seems like a little bit of a colder weather drink to me, or a fall drink.
I mean, yeah, it would be good if I had like a stick as a stirrer for it, which would obviously make it a fall drink,
but we're all season drinkers here. There you go. Jason, what are you drinking?
Exactly.
I recently got a Stella Artois chalice as part of a promotion that was too good to turn down. It was, if you buy a second order of Stella, you get to keep your glass. So I did that, and now I have the Stella at home to appropriately fill it. Even though it doesn't pour in the commercials, you might have seen someone dramatically swish a knife across the top to reduce the head. A bottle does not provide you with that much beer to ever have to do that, unless you pour it like a moron. So you don't get the drama of the slashing, but the beer is still good.
You know what the answer is, right? Go buy a keg. Go buy a keg.
More beer.
That's the answer.
Next time,
do you have said knife or any knife that you would be willing to dramatically slash off some foam with?
Could use like a standard table knife.
Yeah, but where's the fun in that? It's foam. You need a decorative.
I don't know if Stella makes a custom foam knife. they didn't give me that promotion.
Well, I am drinking an unnamed drink that I've had before on the show. It's gin, a little bit of simple syrup, and rosemary shaken together and then served up. It doesn't have a name because I'm still waiting for a game-winning goal to happen since I issued that challenge. And it still hasn't happened because we haven't won a game in so long. So for those of you who missed that episode or don't remember, this drink will be named after the next DC United player to score a game-winning goal. And I'm not counting penalty kicks in knockout competitions. I mean an actual game-winning goal. Whoever scores the first one for DC United will have this drink named after them. This will be a gin, whoever.
You're just saying that because you don't want to call it the James Riley.
I really don't. A gin Riley, although that actually sounds kind of cool. If he scores a game-winning goal for us, so be it. But he's not going to. So let's get on with the show. Actually, I would rather talk about drinking more, because DC United is so, so bad. So bad, guys.
We're the worst.
We are. There's actually, on Steve Davis's power rankings this week, we are not the worst, because we are not, in, I think, Jeremiah Ocean's words, a flaming dumpster fire the way Chivas USA are. But we're pretty damn close right now, guys. We are...
On the field, we may be the worst MLS team
..
in history. So we've got that going. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so last weekend, lost 2-0 at Chicago. Early own goal off of Perry Kitchen and Nick DeLeon, putting one past Joe Willis, and then a late breakaway as we try to push for an equalizer. Mike McGee gets behind the defense for the second time in about 20 seconds, and this time he puts it away. So, do you guys have anything you actually want to talk about from that game, or should we just move on to the more general suckitude?
I do want to point out that I thought, and obviously we're talking about progress in relative terms, because for us progress just means not, you know, our 11 players shooting on our own goal.
Yeah.
I thought Dwayne DiRosario, he didn't have a good opening 20 minutes. It looked like more of the same from him. But I think after the first 20 minutes, he started to drop off the front line, looked a little active. He looked like he had some ideas. He was trying – a lot of times he was looking to the fullbacks and giving them passes that made them run into the attack rather than slow down again. So he was trying to get some other guys more engaged in the attack and get some options going, which is – one of the things he used to do very well, and he hasn't really done this season. So that, you know, that little nugget was a piece of progress. But then he got taken out, which I didn't really agree with, unless he had some sort of injury that the team just isn't making public.
I'm guessing Ben Olsen decided before the game that D'Ro wasn't going to play more than an hour in Chicago, because he played 120 minutes in Richmond on Tuesday. So that's just taking care of your guy. I was surprised that he started at all, honestly. I really didn't expect him to, because he's on the wrong side of 33, and he's going to break down if you keep doing that. He's had recent injury problems. So as far as that game, tactically, it might have been the best decision, better decision to leave him in, but for his own health, for the team, because who knows if we need him to score goals right now or to win games, because it's not working with him or without him, but he is still one of the better players on the team, and you got to protect him.
Yeah, but I mean, the only thing that's all reasonable. I just think that at this point, you know, taking a risk to win a game and just hoping that nothing happens there, we need a win so badly that you know, you have to gamble in certain spots, and sometimes it's just on, is a player going to have an injury from overuse, and it's possible, but then D'Ro doesn't have as many minutes on his legs over the course of the season as a lot of the other guys, because of various reasons,
mostly suspensions.
There's the head-butting suspension style, but you know, it was a situation where we needed a little more of what he was doing, and that doesn't absolve the rest of the team from not also providing that. Certainly, if someone comes off, but you're doing something that's correct, the other guys on the team can't just say, well, the one guy that was doing it is gone, so now we just carry on not doing that. Someone needed to step into that void and provide that sort of play, prompting other players to do a little more, and no one really delivered that.
Yeah, and that's the story of the year, isn't it? Nobody's stepping up. Chris Pontius is timid on the ball, and when he does try something, mostly it doesn't work, except for his two assists this year. One of them was a header, basically, at midfield that went to Raphael, who scored a ridiculous goal, and one of them was his assist on Porter's goal, where he just took a pass from Nick DeLeon and sent it in an in-swinger to the back post, and Porter was there to finish it.
We have two goals this year.
Yeah,
I've forgotten what goals look like.
It's something that we're not used to seeing on a particular end of the field right now, and it sucks, you guys. It really sucks.
Although, speaking of the other end of the field, which I mean not speaking of it at all. Oh, I do want to take this time to commend Connor Shanoski. I think he did a very decent job in his first start, and I'd like to continue to see him out there, preferably with Ethan White rather than Daniel Woolard.
Yeah, I could just see your hands in your pockets there. I really enjoyed our time with you, Connor, and I'd like to see you again.
First base tonight, but next time maybe.
Wrong sport, buddy. Wrong sport. Yeah, he did. He did well. You know, he was strong against Richmond. He got caught out a couple of times against Chicago, chasing balls upfield or guys he was marking upfield that he probably shouldn't have, and he left Woolard on an island a couple of times. But that's something you learn to deal with, that kind of movement and how to position yourself
especially
better.
Especially his first MLS start.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd add that, you know, those mistakes weren't as I've seen some severe center back mistakes that are much closer to our goal. If you're going to make a mistake as center back, I mean, the whole job there is to avoid making mistakes if at all possible. But if you are going to make them, it's better to make them further upfield so that the rest of the back four can at least, you know, shift into a three for a moment while you recover.
Right, or your defensive
or
midfielder
from the midfield can jump back.
Yeah, exactly.
And those are the kind of mistakes where you're like, well, that's not good, but it's not catastrophic. And our other center backs have often made catastrophic mistakes. So just by that alone, Shinovsky, ignoring the details of his performance broadly, made progress over the other people trying to play that position.
Yeah, so like we said, 2-0 against Chicago. About a month ago, a commenter on the site, I don't remember exactly who, I should have looked it up before the show, but mentioned that in 2010, and I feel okay saying 2010 now because we are every bit as bad as we were in the year that must not be named, but can be named now, I guess. And that season, every loss was like a unique snowflake of suck. And this year's the same thing. We've had games where we lost a close one. We've had games where we lost a blowout. We've had own goals. We've had soft goals. We'd have goal of the week winners against us. We have had games where we looked good going forward, even, and we still lost. We've had games where we've provided nothing in the attacking third, like against Chicago. Of course we lost. We've had games where our defense was good. We've had games, obviously, where they really, really weren't. Every single loss is different. We're not losing because of the same mistake on the field every time. We're losing because we're bad. And yep. That's it's not a fun place to be.
I mean, bad teams find ways to lose, just like good teams find ways to win. And we routinely find a way to seek out a defeat rather than, you know, there is the instance where every team that plays us essentially does the exact same thing, where they set up to defend and keep it tight in the back and wait for our idiot mistake, and then they capitalize on it. Other than that, every game is different.
Yeah, that's about right. There are games when we dominate possession, or at least control the majority of it, and games where we don't see the ball at all. Of course, right. The game where we saw the least amount of possession, we tied 0-0, so maybe we should just bunker for a while and just focus on keeping our defense in order, because at least then we were getting draws.
Maybe we should try and sneak a 12th man onto the field, because they might not notice, and that would give us a much better chance at winning.
But Ben, what 12th player would we bring on that wouldn't make things worse?
Oh,
that's where we are.
Marcelo Zaragoza?
I mean, he's
womp womp womp.
Yeah, I assume injury, a knee brace of some kind. Yeah.
I just put his body on the field. I mean,
all right. Guys, novel strategy. What if we slide tackle the ref?
Ooh, I like it. Especially if it's Ricardo Salazar or Hilario Grajeda.
Yeah. I mean, my plan basically is this. Step one, slide tackle referee. Step three, profit.
Exactly. Yes.
We'll be the slide tackle gnomes. It'll be great.
If we had 50 gnomes on the field in addition to the 11 players, I think we could at least bite people's ankles. Okay.
So what you're saying is we should hire Richie Williams?
I mean, he did really well for us.
He's out there. He's available.
I mean, I'd like him to be a member of DC United's organization at some level.
Yeah, there you go. So let's play a little bit of general manager. This is similar to...
We'll probably do a better job than Dave Casper.
Yeah. The guy knows his roster rules and he knows his salary mechanisms and loopholes in MLS. But obviously, talent evaluation and the long-term planning have not been up to snuff. I don't have anything against him. It's just right now, you know, for the second time in four seasons, we are the worst team in the league, and we have a shout at worst team in the history of the league. So let's pretend we are in his shoes. What is the first thing you would do? Would you fire Ben Olsen? Would you, well, not fire, fire yourself.
Fire myself.
We're going to take that off the table. We're going to assume you are in the position as yourself. Would you hire new scouts? What is the single first order of business you would do to get the house in order? Ben, you go first.
I mean, if I was Dave Casper, a supposed expert at manipulating MLS rules, I would hire someone like a technical director, director of soccer, whatever you want to call him, who is a talent evaluator, the head scout, Kurt Morsink's boss, Ben Olsen's boss, the guy who is in charge of developing the academy, scouting players.
So basically, you would demote yourself.
Is his bailiwick. What?
Basically, you would demote yourself. You would hire somebody to be above the general manager.
Well, or promote himself to president of the club, and then hire someone else to do the on the field part, and then you.
So you are good with
the Bismarck,
right? It which seems kind of like where the ownership has tried to go. We have a COO who focuses on business, a chief marketing officer who focuses on that aspect, and a general manager who is essentially in charge of the soccer.
Right.
And I'm all for that. I'm completely in favor of that. But right now, the guy in charge of the soccer isn't doing a good job at providing the soccer.
Right. If somehow we could have gotten Claudio Reyna instead of New York City FC BBQOMG getting Claudio Reyna, that would have been a perfect situation. Claudio Reyna in charge of the soccer, Dave Casper in charge of the contracts, and magic might have happened.
Yeah, I think that's about right. I would love to see somebody, a new position created, call it president, call it technical director, call it director of soccer, just don't call it director of football, which is Claudio Reyna's title at NYC WTFC. We all stand on the same page when it comes to that. But yeah, I agree. I want somebody put in that position. But substantively, Jason, what would the first change be?
I'd like to see us acquire stronger defenders. I mean, just as a starting point, guys that you can rely on to not make big mistakes as often. There are some players out there in MLS that aren't starting for their respective teams that could be had for not that much. We have a large amount of allocation money from the Andy Nahar transfer that, you know, by MLS rules, a certain percentage of that money had to go towards the soccer side. It had to become an allocation money. You couldn't spend on capital improvements for your facilities or chartering flights or whatever. You can't spend it on a...
Well,
I think with the homegrown player, it was 75%.
No, I mean, that's
allocation.
No. Yeah, it's $600,000+ is allocation money. The rest is cash that has to be reinvested.
Right.
The rest of the team's share is cash that has to be reinvested. But more than $500,000 of it is allocation.
Right. And right now, we haven't used any of it. And there are guys right now that not even a major allocation, but, you know, a $50,000, $75,000 allocation. It's not very much money when you've got that much in your pocket. Could go and get some very capable players that are not currently starting that would be instantly better than our available players. And I said defense earlier, but it really could be several different positions. You know,
Juan Agudelo.
Well, at least with Agudelo, you have to worry about him going to Europe for nothing at the end of the year.
Yeah,
if
you could
right now,
if you could get him to do a sign and trade, he'd be worth getting. But beyond that,
we did that with Brandon McDonald back when he was good. he came here for almost nothing from San Jose because the Earthquakes were operating under the assumption that he was going to sign in Europe as soon as he was a free agent, and we offered him what he what he actually wanted, and he stuck around. So that's the danger that an Agudelo trade would have had. But it would have at least, I would hope that we at least made that phone call and looked into it, and maybe Agudelo said, I'm not interested in staying, and the Revs said, well, okay, fine, we don't care. But there are plenty of players around the league that are out there that are available that could help us today that we would be able to fit in as a starter as soon as they got acclimated in practice. They have a week of training, 2 weeks of training, and they would be a starter for us. And that's where we need to improve is we don't need depth. We need the players that start games have to be better. So I'd be looking to do – I mean, obviously we need help from abroad as well. But if Dave Casper is very good at manipulating within MLS and picking up domestic talent that has been overlooked or undervalued or whatever, you know, these are players that are sitting there not getting used that could help us today that, you know, obviously teams know we need a lot of help, so they probably can demand a little more out of us. But at this point, maybe we have to pay a premium based on need just to dig ourselves out of this. So it's just about making deals. Philadelphia will be playing them next week. They've got Roger Torres that he sits the bench. He never gets used. John Hackworth talks him up. He makes a difference when he does. On the rare occasions he plays, he makes a difference. He adds a lot to their attack, and then he gets put in hibernation for 2 months. Philadelphia, they'd probably be happy to get anything for him just for the fact that he is doing them no good at all right now. And that's just one example. And these are the kind of players that we should be able to go out and acquire on a trade. And maybe we can't make trades in the Eastern Conference. Maybe Philadelphia has already said we're not trading him to you because we play you so often. But there's Western Conference teams as well. We've already, strip mined Chivas USA as much as we possibly could. But there are other teams out there with players that we could call up and make a deal with and get someone that's actually – and that we haven't done that yet is sort of puzzling at this point.
I'm guessing that other teams are trying to hold United hostage. I'll be charitable to Dave Casper in the front office on this one. I think other teams are saying, okay, you want to trade? Give us a first round pick or Chris Pontius or Nick De Leon or Perry Kitchen or Bill Hamid.
I mean, why wouldn't you? Because
yeah, exactly.
No one on this team has trade value right now. So, yeah, why wouldn't you do that?
That's not really conducive to future business, though. Like, we're not going to be this bad forever.
Right, yeah.
Believe it or not. And so, next year, if some other team is struggling and they need a trade and they call us, it's like, oh, well, look who comes crawling back. So I don't think it's, I assume that we're going to be paying a little more than most teams because Everyone knows we're desperate.
We're desperate, yeah.
But I don't think there are too many GMs or technical directors or whatever the job is that are going to be that upfront about it, that it'll hurt them in the long run, where they'll lose a potential trading partner in the future.
All right, so let's look abroad. The international window opens in just over a month, July 8th, for MLS, the MLS secondary in-season window, I guess, opens July 8th. What position, where, and do you have any players in mind when you get there about who you're going to look for? Hercules Gomez would have been one, but he just got sold to Tijuana. He's going to be playing for Cholos next year. So do you just go scour the earth for a forward, for a creative midfielder who can play somewhere, either wide or deep, or even advanced? Matt Doyle at MLSsoccer.com had a great video series over the last few weeks about the evolution of the modern playmaker, and it's fantastic watch, talking about the different types of playmakers that exist in MLS now and how the classic number 10 is all but extinct in the league right now. So do you go try to find a guy who can provide that? Do you go and find an international defender who can calm people down and play out of the back? Do you just bring in a fullback, because that's the number one starting piece that we lost last year? Ben, what's your first target in the international market?
For me, I think you have to build out of the back, just like you do in a game itself. That's what you need to do to build your team. So you take this next month before the international window opens. So you see what you have in Shinovsky and White. And then if you don't like what you have, then you go for a center back or two center backs. And if you think Shinovsky and White might be okay, then you go for outside backs and try and find some fullbacks who are going to be able to get up and down and both help in defense and in the attack. Obviously, we miss Branko Boskovic a lot. I think we miss him a lot more than we do Hamdi Salihi or Emiliano Dudar. But I think Andy Nahar is the player that this team misses the most. So having an attacking fullback, having the ability to solidify the back and build from there just makes everyone else better. So I think starting at the back and then building forward from there, obviously I'd love a number 8 or a number 10 who is just a solid, great player as well. But I think you have to start building from the back and then go from there.
Jason, how about you? All else being equal, what is your one international target?
I mean, for me, our biggest weakness is the mental side of the game when it really counts. Whenever a player gets a good scoring opportunity, it seems like we're likely to miss. Whenever the other team has put us in a tricky position, we're likely to come up short defending in our own. It's almost like inside the 2 18-yard boxes, our players are at their worst, except for our goalkeepers who, you know, in all this negativity, mostly get a pass. They've been pretty good. So if it's a center back, you know, I agree with Ben that your center backs need to be any good team, any team that wins things, you'll notice they've got good center backs. You can get away with almost a weakness almost everywhere else on the field. Even there are teams that have won things with bad goalkeeping. But if your center backs are poor, you're probably going to lose a lot of games based on avoidable goals being conceded. But at the same time, our offense our defense isn't the worst in MLS statistically, whereas our offense is definitively the worst in MLS. So if the money goes to a striker that can actually convert chances and maybe even play well enough that we create more than 2 or 3 chances a game, which is just as big of a problem right now, then that would be just as good. That would, if anything, that would make us at least not such a chore to watch, because if we're losing games 3-2, at least you can say, well, you know, the defense was bad, but at least we, you know, had a few moments of fun during the game. Right now, knowing that we're going to lose blank to 0 is just, it's just miserable. So I almost want to go to the opposite end of the field and find a striker. But on the other hand, like I said, you know, no good team is going to have the weaknesses in the defense that we've got. So it really is at both ends of the field that we're at our worst. Not that the midfield isn't also bad. I kind of, when you were describing the kinds of players we could go out and sign, I just kind of wanted to say yes. And
yeah, that's the conceit of this exercise, really, is we need all of those things.
Yes,
but which one would you pick if you could only pick one? And for me, it's probably some kind of creative midfielder. I don't care if he's advanced as a Trek Artista, if he's a Regista, if he's somebody like Brad Davis or Mauro Rosales, who creates from the outside in, or even the way Graham Zusi's playing right now. Honestly, I would pick up Graham Zusi. I would clone him and I would pick him up for the team. That's my answer. But yeah, either that or a center back would be my top choices, because with, you know, you saw the Galaxy last weekend. They didn't have Omar Gonzalez against the Revs, and they completely broke down. Last season, he was hurt at the beginning of the year, and they were awful. He comes back, and they're the best team in the league. It's just insane, the difference that Omar Gonzalez makes for the Galaxy. And that kind of center back is kind of what we need. Somebody who can win every aerial battle, win every one-on-one battle, and be sound positionally. That's it. That's what he does. That's his game. And that's what we don't have, amongst many other things. But in the center back, that's what we don't have right now. Anyway, we're going to move on. We're going to bring in Steve Storr from the Bent Musket just after this to preview DC United's trip up to New England. So stick around. This is Filibuster, the Black and Red United podcast. Welcome back. This is Filibuster, the Black and Red United podcast, joined now by Steve Storr of TheBentMusket.com. It's SB Nation's New England Revolution site. And, of course, DC United will be traveling up to New England to play the Revs on Saturday, 7:30 on Comcast Sportsnet or MLS Live if you're outside of the DMV. So, Steve, how's it going, man?
It's going great, guys. How are you guys doing?
You know, life kind of sucks right now. It's very sad. The weather's beautiful, but it's very sad here in DC United land. We have to start off asking you this question because it's what we ask all our guests and each other at the beginning of the show. What are you drinking?
Well, the funny thing is I was just going to get cheap beer for the night because I'm going to be watching the Bruins all night. And I figured I'm going to get, you know, real tore up and I might as well do it on a budget. But when you told me you were going to ask me that question, I decided to go a little – get something I wanted to try for a while. And I'm drinking Raging Bitch Belgian IPA by Flying Dog Brewery. And it's not disappointing. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I'm going to take that as a welcome sign because they're from Frederick, Maryland, which is just up the road from D.C., less than an hour's drive away. Definitely a part of the D.C. metro area. So I'm going to take that as a sign of respect to our beer-making skills down here.
And capitulation.
And capitulation on the soccer field as well. So that's it for the interview, guys. Steve thinks DC United's going to win. You heard it here. It's actually really appropriate because DC United is teaming up with a local brewery in the district called DC Brow. And we're recording this on Wednesday night. Tomorrow, they're announcing what the name of the collaboration between DC United and DC Brow will be. And it'll be available Saturday at the brewery in Growlers and at the Pug for the Game Watch party on H Street Northeast. So I'm going to be at the Pug on Saturday drinking whatever golden ale they decide to name after DC United. Anyway, let's talk about soccer a little bit, which is going to be unfortunate. Steve, you know, when we saw our schedule for DC United for this month, we were a little bit happy about it because we had the Chicago Fire, we have you guys, we have Toronto FC. It looks like a favorable schedule after the hell that we've been through so far. But then Chicago goes out and picks up Bakari Sumari and Mike McGee and beats us 2-0. And then, of course, last week you go out and beat the Galaxy 5-0. What gives, man?
I don't know. I mean, that's definitely tough on you guys. You look at that. You look at a month. You say we can get back off the schneid here. We can, you know, get a couple wins, maybe a couple draws, some points, and all of a sudden, every team you think you're going to beat easily is playing really well. I mean,
At least be competitive with. That's the low bar we're looking for. Is not embarrassing ourselves.
It's fair that you say that, Adam, because it's not like I haven't been there with you for the last couple of years.
Yeah, that's true. So you went out and beat the two-time defending champs 5-0. What got into your boys?
You know, they went out and they did what they needed to do. It's no secret by now that we have the best defense in MLS. I think it was a little a case of wondering if maybe we were getting lucky or if the Revs were for real at first. But since the offense has exploded and the defense has still kept it under wraps, I think we've realized that the core we have in the back is really what the Revs need to build off of. And the 5-0 win, I mean, it was really good defending and taking your opportunities when you get them. And I mean, you know, credit to Carlo Cudicini, he made it easy, those goals. But, you know, it was one of those things where there's so much attacking talent on this team that was going to happen. That was coming. The fact that it happened against LA is great, but we blow a team out, and it was going to be soon. And I mean, I'm just glad it happened by now. You know what I mean? So there's too many really good players in this team for that not to happen. Probably more than once this season.
You talked about your defense, but it really is the offense where a lot of the players that people have heard of reside for you guys, and including MLS co-assist leader Kellen Rowe, who I think is just in his second year of playing, and that's a theme for you guys as well. Tell us a little bit about how he's improved over the last year.
Kellen, last year, he was important to us. He was, you know, I think he scored 2 or 3 goals. Yeah, like I think 4 or 5 assists on the entire year. It was not a terrible opening year for him, but there were games he would disappear. He would find that he'd be better as a sub than as a starter. He'd disappear from games, and it was tough to expect consistency out of him. Maybe that's because he was just coming out of college, but it was maddening. Now, about 2 months ago in this season, right before the win against Philadelphia, Jay Heaps switched up the team scheme to a 4-1-4-1 kind of setup. And the two guys in the wings and the one guy up top get to switch off and kind of be fluid. And if Kellen and Lee win in the middle, and they kind of pull the strings, Kellen being more of the penetrator box-to-box guy and Lee being more of the string puller, and that has really, really benefited Kellen's game. That has really, really benefited Kellen's game in the sense that he can score and pull strings. And, I mean, you've been seeing – you saw it in the Open Cup game against Rochester this past week. You saw it in the game. Even when he came in, he played 35 minutes. He had two assists and a goal. He can pass. I mean, he can throw a slide rule pass at some, as long as they're moving the right way from 40, 50 yards out, and he can score. And I really think Diego Fernandez, obviously, is the everyone's talking about, everyone's thinking of. But I really think Kellen can it's going to be his breakout year, too, this year. I think he's ready because moving centrally is going to get more out of him as a starter, and that's really where we need him to be. We need him to be that kind of key player as a starter. And I mean, he's 20, 21 years old, but I mean, the talent is there. You can see it, and the IQ has come along. And he's adjusted to the pace of the game, and he's poised. He's ready for that.
Fagundes, who is the next name on my list here? He's all of 12 years old. And he scored 5 goals and has 2 assists this year. Where did he come from?
Well, I mean, it's kind of one of those – it's a symptom of nobody paying attention to New England in this league because we've been so bad for so long. And Diego, we've all known since Diego was pulled up as a homegrown player 2 years ago that he was going to be that guy. He was going to be that good. He was going to be that talented. It's just this year was him finally adjusting to the pace of the game and becoming really coming into his own, being able to use the movement, understanding that his size is going to be a limitation, but being able to try to twist that to his advantage in a way, creating synergy with his teammates. And I mean, right now he's got a good attacking core around him that he can kind of work with. And he's really found a way to kind of, especially with Juan Agudelo coming into the team too, he's really found a way to take advantage of that. And use his talents to the best of his ability. Frankly, I think he needed the first year to get over the fact, you know, oh my God, I'm a professional player. I'm 16 years old. Then the second year to get used to, like, all right, this is what MLS is. This is playing professionally. This year, it was all about him finally being able to show off what he can do. So for us, none of this is surprising. For I think people around the league, maybe it's a little bit, honestly, it's because if you've been looking at the things that have been coming out of New England, I guess journalism-wise about the team, I've seen this coming from a mile away.
So you mentioned Juan Agudelo. You're like anticipating my questions here, man. Great job. How does Fagundes fit into the team with Agudelo if you guys are playing that lone striker formation? How does that work?
Well, Agudelo becomes the lone striker. I mean, it's you go Fagundes wide on the right, Sen wide on the left. They swap wings a little. Agudelo can swap out wide too, and he basically is a guy. He works hard. He holds up the ball. He can score goals. He can pass. He's very much a. He's very much. I mean, I guess to use a baseball team, he's very much a five-tool player in that sense. And Diego and Juan, their lockers are next to each other. They both speak Spanish. I mean, these are things that Diego and Juan both told me in interviews and stuff too, and stuff that you can tell is they've hit it off immediately. They're fast friends. They communicate on the field. They kind of know each other's mind, and it allows having Juan up there where he's dangerous, he's potent, he runs, gives space to Diego. And Diego, when he has space, is not no one is going to beat him. You're not going to contain him if he has space. And having Juan out there, and then, you know, also Kellen and Sair and Lee, you have to give Diego space, and it's going to make him successful. And Juan has the finishing touch to be successful by himself as well. And you could see it a little bit on Sunday against LA. You could definitely see it against Toronto. They're on a telepathic almost link between each other. They just one knows where the other's going and how to get him to the place where he needs to be in a dangerous position. And they know when to return the ball to each other, when not to. It's really, really exciting to watch. They definitely have that kind of link right now, and it's going to be important develop that, because I think you're going to see Agudelo, and maybe I'm anticipating you guys again, you're going to see Agudelo really, I think, start to Overton as the starting striker in the team, because Jerry just hasn't been able to get it done. And it's not knocking his talent, but Juan has scored 2 goals in 3 games. Jerry has scored, I think, in his entire Revolution career, 3 and about 20. I mean, the numbers don't lie. And if Diego is going to be this focal point of the team going forward, he needs a player around him that he links with, and he links with Juan. So that's kind of how it's going to work.
Yeah. Hey, Steve. Bobby Shuttleworth has kind of been a revelation at goalkeeper this year, taking over finally for the zombie that is Matt Reese. Do you think his success is mostly because of the extremely good back line you guys have had this year, or is he really going to be one of the top goalkeepers in MLS come the end of the year?
It's a hybrid of both, in my opinion. I mean, we have a new nickname at the Bent Musket for. We've been trying to assign some nicknames to each player, and we've discovered a new nickname for Bobby Shuttleworth is Robert Shuttleworth, Professional Gentleman of Leisure, because he's just. He makes it look easy sometimes, and he's just so good, and he's developed. We've watched him develop before our eyes. I mean, I remember watching Bobby a few years ago and thinking that he was going to be a one and done in this league. He was going to be nowhere. He wasn't going to be very good. He's going to be playing USL. He was going to be a league pool goalkeeper, and that was going to be the end of it. And then last year, Matt Reese got hurt, and then Bobby came in and kind of took the starting job over for him, and he played very well. And I mean, the Revs had a decent run at the end of the season last year, after a horrible season overall, and it was you start to think to yourself, you know, maybe Bobby's got it. And then the preseason, Bobby didn't play very well. Matt Reese takes the job back, and you're thinking, okay, you know, we were getting ahead of ourselves. But probably since the 4-1 loss to New York, because Bobby was in goal for that. Since then, he has easily been one of the top three MLS goalkeepers playing the game right now. Maybe top five, but I would put him in top three. But I'm a homer, part of it is the fact that he's got such a good defense in front of him. With Jose Gonsalves playing in front of you, I mean, you can do a lot wrong, and Jose will organize that defense and make sure that those sort of mistakes don't propagate into like detrimental plays. But I mean, you just look at Bobby's save percentage. Look how many saves he's making per game. Look at the saves that he's making per game. You can't. There is literally no. Away, there's no way you can deny that he's arrived. He's at least a starter level goalkeeper in MLS, and I mean, this guy could be the limit for him. And look no further than Tally Hall, as somebody who kind of came out of nowhere and became, you know, people are talking about him for the national team right now. So I think Bobby is a fantastic goalkeeper, and he's the future right now in my opinion, and I couldn't be happier to have him in goal for the Revs.
I was going to touch on Gonsalves, but you kind of brought up what a job he's done in organizing the guys around him. So the other thing I had jotted down was the fact that the Revs have been through a lot off the field this year with Kevin Olsen being diagnosed with leukemia, and then Matt Reese's father-in-law was injured in the Boston Marathon bombings. How is it? I mean, the team obviously has really since you mentioned that the loss to the Red Bulls. Since then, you guys have been. And I think it's like 4 wins, 1 loss, 2 ties. What's going on off the field that's bringing that group together rather than letting those events sort of tear the team apart or at least serve as a big distraction?
Before I address the question, I want to apologize. I'm actually at a friend's place watching the Bruins game, and some of them have been doing their best to distract me while I'm doing this podcast. So if I've rambled at all, it's because I've been losing focus.
good friends, those guys.
Yeah, great guys, all of them. But to address the question, I mean, I think they're just a very close group. Honestly, they're just a very close group. And having been around them, I'm lucky enough to be in an MLS market. I don't know if you guys have the same privilege. I'm lucky enough to be in a market and be in a position where I get to go to the press box, I get to go to the games, home games in the press box. I get to go in the locker room and talk to players and go to training. And you get a sense from these guys that they're all, you know, nice guys, but most of them, or all of them, really genuinely like each other, and that they've kind of built similar personalities, or similar enough personalities, where they can gel really, really well and really, really easily. And I think, you know, you get a thing like Kevin Alston getting diagnosed with leukemia. Kevin Alston's a veteran on this team at this point. So he's kind of, you know, when young players come in, they look to him because he's close in age, but he's also got the know-how to help bring them through MLS. And, you know, they're going to look up to him and support him naturally. But he's a very, very outgoing social guy among that team. He's a nice guy. You can see that. And it's easy to want to support him, even if you didn't know him. So that kind of helps. And then what happened to Matt Reese's father-in-law was That's horrible with the Boston bombings and stuff like that. And the team rallies around him because Matt Reese is the elder statesman. I mean, he's the guy. And he's also a wonderful person, a really funny guy, a really personable guy. You can see even in him and Bobby how he's taken Bobby under his wing a little bit. And not only is he pushing him because, I mean, Matt still wants to start, but he's also teaching him. And it's just that everybody on this team seems so easy to like and so easy to want to support that when you have these things off the field that come in and create this adversity, every team should support their teammate in adversity, but it becomes so much easier when it's when you have this personal connection with these players. And I look to basically anyone in any locker in that entire room when I go in there, and I don't see a single one who doesn't belong. And I think that's in every team, you might always see those one or two players that are kind of off to the side. Not that nobody likes them, but that they're just not really connected with the team on that deep level. I just don't see that in the Revolution locker room. And I'm being completely honest when I say that. And I think they would have rallied and overcome the off the field stuff anyway. But it makes it so much easier to do that, and so much more impactful when you do. For that to happen, when you have that mentality among your players and that relationship between all players, so I think that's definitely the key element right there. That's been kind of helping that go through.
So we've been talking about a lot of the Revs' strengths so far in this interview, and I've been getting sadder and sadder and sadder. So maybe you can help talk me off the ledge a little bit here, Steve. If you were coaching DC United or any team against the Revs, how would you go about attacking them? What would be the in your game plan?
I would play a very, very – I don't know if you have the legs for it, but I would play a very, very, very high energy, high press game. Because if there's one thing the Revs are kind of bad at, as many MLS teams are, but they have been for years, it's off the ball movement. Now, a couple of players in the team have kind of come into their own and learned how to do it. Diego moves very well. Kellen moves very well. Juan is okay at it. Lee's pretty good at it. But for the most part, there's a lot of players in this team who are key contributors to the team, and they play very well, but they get caught ball watching. And not usually in defense. The Revolution defense is pretty good about not doing that. But in attack and in midfield, you have a lot of guys – I apologize. You have a lot of guys who get caught ball watching a lot. So they're not – if you play a high-pressure game, you'll probably get to a point where a Revolution player has the ball where he has no outlet, and then you can take it from him. And that will create breaks. That will create opportunities. That will create possession for DC. And that would scare me. That's what Portland did. Portland didn't let the Revolution get an ounce of the ball. I mean, they were just it was maddening to watch. It was amazing to watch Bobby, but it was maddening to watch everything else, because the few chances that the Revs crafted against Portland were on the break, and Portland just kept the pressure up, the tempo high, and you see players standing there with their markers, in some cases following their markers. And it's infuriating. But there's only so – I mean, that's only so many MLS teams can really keep that up for a full 90. So it's not as much of a threat. And the team is getting better at it now. The Revs are getting better at it now. If you can play that game, I mean, you have a shot. I'm not going to say you're going to win, but you definitely have a shot.
All right, Steve, thanks a lot for coming on the show, man. Why don't you tell our listeners where they can find you online?
Well, you can read me at www.thebentmusket.com. I am the editor and founder of that website. I used to write for a couple other outlets, but I've kind of refined my focus. If you want a Revolution or Greater New England Soccer kind of analysis, that's the place to go.
All right, find us at blackandredunited.com, Twitter at filibusterdcu, at blackandredu for the main site. Email is filibusterpodcast@gmail.com. We're on iTunes. Give us a rating and review if you find us over there. And the most important thing you can do for us, and we would love you forever, obviously, as I tell you every week, is tell a friend about us. We're only going to grow as a podcast if you spread the gospel. Even if you think we're just okay, tell someone that, and maybe they'll check us out, and we would really appreciate it. So that's it for us this week. Find me at the Pug on Saturday night if you want to. I'll be there drinking whatever DC United beer they have on tap.
Adam, Adam, if you don't mind, I'd like to cut in and just one thing. I would also encourage, I'm sure everybody who listens to this podcast already does, but definitely go check out Black and Red United. I don't like DC at all. I still read you guys' stuff because you guys do a phenomenal job. And anyone who listens to the podcast and doesn't regularly read Black and Red United is doing it wrong. You guys are great.
Aw, thanks, Steve. We like you a lot, too. And the Bent Musket is doing yeoman's work up there in New England. And that's somebody who's hated the Revs from the day I first saw you play, actually, in DC, no less. Taylor Twellman scored a goal and broke my heart, and I've never gotten over it. So that's it for us this week. Thanks again for listening. Steve, thanks so much for coming on. We really appreciate it. So for Jason and Ben, I'm Adam. Say goodbye, Jason.
Goodbye, Jason.